Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, we talk about America 250. We get the local angle from Matt Ray about the Grand Rapids A250 team. We talk to Russ Hines about fireworks all over West Michigan this weekend. We talk to Jim the Shark Dryer about towing 250 cannonballs while swimming 22 miles in August. We talk to the national chair of America 250. We talk about new research that suggests some of America's deepest divides date back to colonial times. And we talk about a new History Tellers Award.
Get you back, Matt Ray, to talk about how celebrations have been, are going, and will go on behalf of the wonderful GRA 250 committee that's been meeting, what now, for probably a year and a half? Remember?
Yeah, it's been a long
time, yeah, even before I started.
Yes, and good work that you do. What's your day job, getting the word out and more?
Yeah, so yeah, I'm program manager and of GRA 250, and so my job is to just make sure that the wonderful people of the steering committee and subcommittees are making sure that their budgets are all aligned and we're making things happen. And it's been a pleasure and an honor to just be, you know, that coordination role to make sure that we have a great weekend and a great 2026.
You need that coordination to get it all in and done and more. And here we are basically to July 4th, but I know activities will be continuing. We'll be speaking with Russ Hines shortly, so we know fireworks are part of this on Saturday. But let's look at some other opportunities and zone in on perhaps July 4th itself. There's a foodie fest and picnic pops at the Acrisure Amphitheater.
Yeah, so foodie fest will be at Calder Plaza, actually, and it'll be kicking off on the 3rd, so tomorrow. Getting excited for that. So Calder Plaza for Foodie Fest. The 4th at the Ford is going to be a great event with our partners over there. They'll have food trucks, activities for families. And then shortly before the fireworks, we'll enjoy the incredible work of the Grand Rapids Symphony at Picnic Pops at the Acrisure Amphitheater.
Let's dig a bit into your Democracy Cafe that's been happening.
Sure. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, we set out to make sure that the experience of GRA 250 was accessible to all Grand Rapidians. That's crucial. You know, we got to this point thanks to the hard work of all of us. And so as we celebrate and recommit over these next 250 years, we want to make sure that everyone could experience this from the ground level. And so Democracy Cafe is one part museum exhibit, if you will, one part social hub and conversation starter, and one part, of course, refreshments. So it's been fun to be going around at all corners of Grand Rapids over the last several months and just providing opportunities to for people to tell their story, opportunities for people to express their opinions on what they'd love to see improved in the community, and just really getting to know all walks of life throughout this great city. And making sure that everyone's aware of this great recommitment that we have for the next 250 years.
Will a Democracy Cafe still be open after July 4th comes and goes?
Absolutely. So we have lots of plans. So first and foremost, we've got other cultural festival events, other opportunities. All of those events are on GRA250.com. And then, of course, we're also exploring opportunities to make sure that it sticks around for the long term, too. And so, having it in residency at your business or institution, we're exploring all sorts of different ways to make sure that the conversations can keep going.
Matt, talk to me about the time capsule submissions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this has been really fun. You know, my good friend and colleague at the Ford, Don Cooper, says every major milestone needs a good time capsule. And, you know, he's absolutely right in that regard. It's a snapshot of where we are today. It can tell a story of where we want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that we gather that snapshot from all corners. And so what we've been doing is just asking people from whether it be cultural institutions, universities, and just your everyday citizens. You know, what about 2026 and this time of 250? What do we want future generations to remember about it? And so we've been having that call. Anyone who wants to submit recommendations for the time capsule can send us an email at support@gra250.com. And then we'll be hosting that with our friends at the Grand Rapids Public Museum, right next to the Bicentennial Time Capsule. So it's a great honor to join them in that.
And then when does that time capsule get closed and then get opened again?
Yeah, so the easy part for us is we'll bury it. Well, I suppose we're not burying it, but we'll be archiving it. And yeah. As soon as it's full, quite frankly, you know, once we feel like we've got a really great story through artifacts, then we'll start announcing dates for the ceremony and all that kind of stuff. As far as opening it back up, that's for future generations. We'll certainly give them an idea, but you know, the Bicentennial Time Capsule, you know, that's not slated until 2076 to be opened. And so I think we've got a while to go here.
Doing the math on that one. Have fun. You're a block party in a box. How's mm-hmm. this been working?
It's been great. So, you know, the great events that we talked about for downtown coming up this weekend, we're very excited to get out and about. But we're also aware that, you know, there's plenty of people, whether, you know, their prior commitments, whether or not able to get downtown. Quite frankly, there's going to be a lot of people who can't join us. And so what can we do to make sure that not only they have the opportunity to celebrate alongside of us, but then, you know, just a reminder that they're all a part of this too. So let's all be sure to throw the same party for GRA 250. And so those block parties in a box have been going here, there, and everywhere. And there's still a few left if people are interested last minute. Again, they can email support@gra250.com and we can set them up with a box.
Matt Ray with us again, surmising, summarizing all to do over the next couple of days, and obviously beyond. A GRA 250 program manager, much behind the scenes, and now it's here. Looks like the library is involved as well.
We've been very, very blessed with so many great partners. And we have, we've had events big and small throughout this year. We've got more events to go. And that's really what we wanted to capture. It was, you know, no matter your role, no matter who you are, it's your opportunity to get involved with this. We couldn't celebrate our success like we do if not for all the Grand Rapidians that came before us. And so let's recommit. Let's start these conversations about how we want to improve even more over the next 250 years.
Wonderful. Okay. We've got a great weekend ahead. Hydrate.
Absolutely.
All that good stuff, sunscreen, and get involved. All right, Matt Ray, we'll talk to you again before the year is over.
Sounds great. Thanks
for
having me.
Thank you for all your good work. He's a big deal when it comes to all things event coordinator Russ Hines in the house. Riverbank Events and Media, you represent many. Are, of course, Samway Riverbank Run and more. But now you're all about the firecracker. Are you ready for the weekend, Russ?
We are ready, Shelley. I mean, you know, it's you know, a beautiful summertime in Michigan. A little warm out there, so make sure to hydrate all day on Saturday. But we're looking forward to the 250th birthday of our country and the huge fireworks celebration in downtown Grand Rapids on Saturday evening.
Yes, we've been lucky to have these as a staple for a few years. But what makes this Saturday extra special?
Well, as I mentioned, it's our country's 250th birthday, and we are just so excited to be able to provide a show in downtown Grand Rapids still. You know, with the River Restoration Project underway and Anabuan Park being closed, we had to work with the city very closely in order to come up with a solution as to where we can shoot the fireworks this year. And we are going to do them very close to where we're at right now, Shelley, on the Fulton Street Bridge. So we're excited about that, and then the viewing area is going to be at 51 Market, which is actually the Amway Hotel employee parking lot. They've been kind enough to let us use that space for the day. So Meyer has stepped up with us, and Meyer is providing a big family fun area there. And they're also providing some extra money so that we can make the fireworks show a little bit bit longer and a little bit bigger. So Soaring Eagle has been our title sponsor on the fireworks for quite a while, and they're still with us, of course, and we really appreciate them. And then we have the Kendall Group, Experience Grand Rapids, the Redwater Dining and Golf Group is with us, Live Space, and of course, as you mentioned, the Amway Riverbank Run.
All supporting, again, a community celebration. Let's get into our times. I'll kind of start at the very end. What time will I hear my first pop in the sky?
Well, we'll fire a warning shot, just a test shot. I shouldn't say a warning shot, a test shot at 10:20. And then the show itself will start promptly at 10:30.
Yes. And back to the very basics. What time shall I gather to enjoy all the festivities if I really want to make a full night of it?
Well, we will open everything up in the viewing area at 6 p.m., and you're welcome to bring your chairs down before that and set up and that kind of thing, but we'll start then and we'll have some entertainment, and then we'll probably really get going with the entertainment, and the band, I think, starts at 7:30, so that we'll have music leading up to the show, and then we're just, you know, obviously the Meyer Fun area will be there. But come on downtown, enjoy our wonderful city. There's just so much to see and do right now, and it's a great time to just come together and celebrate our country's birthday.
And all of this does involve planning. That's why we're talking about it today on a Thursday. I mean, you'll have some significant road and bridge closures, yes?
We will. Obviously from a viewing standpoint, we will end up closing Pearl Street, probably about Pearl Street Bridge, about 8:30. So that folks can use that area as well. The Blue Bridge will be open for viewing. And then obviously, you know, along the river, wherever you can find a spot, obviously you have to stay away from our safety zones, which will be clearly marked. But, you know, the one thing I will remind everybody is that, you know, to hydrate, B, please leave your fireworks and your pets at home. We don't need those downtown that day. There's just so many things going on. And trust me, there'll be plenty of fireworks.
And if we want to stay on the safety roll, we still have to say this, be patient and courteous, stay alert. If you see something, say something.
Please, you know, if you see, you know, there'll be lots of staff down there. If you see something that doesn't look like it belongs there, you should let us know. If any questions at all, call 911, tell the dispatcher where you're at and what you've seen, and the right people will respond to that as quickly as possible.
Can one bring their own sandwich?
Sure, you can bring your own basket down or cooler. We're not. Please don't bring large coolers. This is an alcohol-free event, including the social zones. So there is no alcohol at all allowed in that area. So just plan accordingly. But if you want to bring your food, we'll also have food trucks there and other things. So there'll be lots of different options. But there'll be thousands of people downtown, and you know you want to plan for it. That's the one thing I would tell you too, is that you know make sure you start thinking about where you're going to park versus just hopping in the car and thinking you're going to whip into the normal parking structure you normally are at, because you may not be able to get to it this day.
That is kind of the city in which we live. The good, bad, ugly, however want to you want to, let's think of it more as a good and a preparation. Russ, I mean, there are Grand Rapids ordinances that prohibit minors from being on a public street. Again, I don't want to be negative, but make sure the kids are hanging with the family.
Without question, from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., there's not supposed to be any minors out on the streets at all. And from 11 to 6 a.m., minors under 15 are supposed to be, you know, in curfew. So, and then midnight to 6 a.m., minors under 17. So, it's really important that, you know, families follow these rules and we keep everybody safe.
Again, Russ Hines with us, all things Riverbank events and media, talking about the city preparing to welcome thousands to our downtown Grand Rapids for Fireworks Spectacular. Again, most likely a fireworks spectacular in your own backyard. And again, this is a big deal. I want to get back to perhaps entertainment. Local groups with us?
We do have local groups that are going to be performing with us. And then we also have a local DJ that's going to be performing too. So should be all kinds of fun, good entertainment. And like I said, bring your water, hydrate. It's going to be warm.
And again, leave Fido at home. Anything else you'd like to share? This is a little different weather than our Gentex Santa Parade, which I hope gets to come back in the fall.
Well, it's a lot closer than you think, Shelley. We're already planning on that one too. So, but yes, no, we're really, really excited to be able to provide this show to downtown Grand Rapids and to West Michigan, and it will be very, very, thanks to Meyer adding this additional funding so that we can make just a bigger and better show for our 250th birthday.
Did you buy your shirt special?
I do have quite a few fireworks shirts now, so I really like this one, the flag.
Wonderful. Bottom line, be safe. As you mentioned, hydrate and don't bring your own fireworks. We have the professionals offering this wonderful display. Details one more time for Saturday, please.
Fireworks starts promptly at 10:30, and I would make sure that you're down here by 10 o'clock so you can find a place to visit and figure out where you're going to watch the show from. And then if you've got any questions, go to 4thofjulygr.com.
You got the topic there, that's for sure. All right, we will see you Saturday. Take care to you, and then I know more events under your leadership to discuss and get the word out. Russ Hines, thank you very much.
Thank you, Shelley.
He's back. Jim the Shark Dryer, planning to tow 250 cannonballs while swimming 22 miles from offshore in Lake Michigan to the coastal town of our beautiful Whitehall, Michigan. We get specifics from you on this day of special programming because you are involved come August 7th. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Shelley. How are you?
Doing fine. You okay being called the shark?
I love it.
As you are, again, if we had, and when we get more time, we'll sit down with you and talk about all your many accomplishments. But let's get right into how you are commemorating America's 250th birthday, Jim.
Yeah, you know, Shelley, I mean, to me, I'm thinking, you know, how can we commemorate 250 years of freedom without, at the same time, honoring all those who fought to win and preserve that freedom? And that's what this is all about. And the coolest thing is, yeah, it's going to be a swim. It's going to be a historic swim. But the coolest thing is it's going to result in a memorial to honor combat veterans for all of posterity. And, you know, to me, that's what this is all about.
All right, so let's get really into what this is all about. Does this happen planning to start August 7th, Jim?
Yeah, weather permitting, as always. It's kind of interesting, you know, if you're pulling 250 cannonballs, and, you know, most people probably don't have a reason to think about this, but I guess I do. You know, first of all, I'm pulling 249 cannonballs in a dinghy, and then the 250th cannonball, that one cannonball is on my back in a ruck pack, and that's for my late father, who was a World War II combat veteran. And so, you know, that's pushing you down. You're lower in the water. There's not a lot of forward momentum because you're pulling all that weight, and it's kind of like keeping an airplane in the air. You've got to have forward thrust. You've got to have lift under your wings. And so, you know, the rougher the conditions are out there, you know, the more difficult and dangerous it is. So we are going to be monitoring the weather. But our hope is, you know, this is part of the Maritime Festival on White Lake, and Saturday, August 7 is when we certainly hope, I'm sorry, Saturday, August 8 is when I hope to finish, which means I would start on the 7th, swim overnight all night, and then finish sometime on the 8th. So hopefully the stars are going to align so that we can do that.
How much does a cannonball weigh?
These are 6-pounders. They're reminiscent of the most common cannonball during the American Revolution. So I'm going to be pulling a total of 1,500 pounds with the 250 cannonballs. See, I just did some math there. How about that?
Well, as you should. Jim, again, we're here on July 2nd, your event August 7th. What does training look like?
Well, for instance, yesterday, I should start. On Saturday, I started a swim at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I finished at 7 a.m. On Sunday. And that's 15 hours of pulling a 20-gallon bucket underwater and with a cannonball on my back. Now, in some ways, I think that training is actually harder than what I'm going to be doing if the weather's good. That 20-gallon bucket underwater, especially with a cannonball on your back, is kind of like pulling around a small building. However, if the weather's bad, it turns on me, there will be nothing worse than that. So training is all involved. It is exhausting, but one day of recovery, and I feel good as new, and I'm ready to do it again.
That is what Jim the Shark Dryer does, planning to tow 250 cannonballs while swimming 22 miles from offshore in Lake Michigan to the coastal town of Whitehall, Michigan. Of course, will you have your swag team with you to make sure that you're all as good?
Well, my team will take me out there and drop me off, and I won't be able to see shore where they drop me off offshore. So they'll probably escort me until I spot shore. And then when we get near White Lake, especially during the Maritime Festival with all the boat traffic, they will probably escort me again. But they will be probably available to take media out and that type of thing from the port of Whitehall. So they will, you know, and they're there if ever I need them. You know, I mean, they're a call away. So, yeah, my team's the best, and they will be there for me.
Good. Again, for this U.S. 250th Combat Veterans Memorial, why you do this. All right, just a couple more specifics. I'm wondering, 22 miles. I mean, how long in a perfect world will this take you?
Man, that can really vary. Let me just quickly say, the reason I'm swimming 22 miles, I had to pick some distance. And 22 is the number that is most often associated with the number of veterans who take their own lives on a daily basis. I mean, just a tragic, tragic figure. So, you know, cannonballs represent the weight of war, obviously, that our troops face on the battlefield, but also when they return home to civilian life. There's a lot of weight there with post-traumatic stress. And so that's why I'm swimming 22 miles. Now, how long it's going to take, man, you know, I look back to when I swam across Lake St. Clair after Detroit filed for bankruptcy and I pulled a ton of bricks for Habitat for Humanity. That took me 52 hours of continuous swimming, but I swam against 3 to 4 foot waves the entire way. When I was on Stanley Superhumans pulling a 27-ton barge across Newport Beach Harbor, they thought it might take me 4 hours. We didn't know. I mean, people, nothing like this has ever been done, so it's always a lot of guesswork. But instead of 4 hours, I did it in 54 minutes. So, you know, it varies wildly. I'm just telling people 36 hours. I think that's a pretty good number on how long this will take. Could be quicker if the conditions are really good. Could be a lot longer if the conditions are bad.
And I understand there is an opportunity for us to track you in near real time here?
Correct. Correct. It's going to ping. I'll have a tracker that will ping like about every 5 minutes. So, you know, if you want to come out, enjoy Maritime Festival and see this crazy swimmer come ashore with these cannonballs that are going to build this historic monument, come on out because you can, you know, kind of get an ETA by following my tracker and when I'll arrive.
That is the ultimate invitation. There we are. Bottom line, in closing, to commemorate America's 250th birthday, why is Jim Dryer doing this?
Well, I mean, you know, we would not have this freedom to enjoy if it were not for the men and women who fought to win and preserve this freedom. And so to me, you know, these people need to be honored. And people can purchase these cannonballs by making a donation to a veterans organization that we're going to appoint. And, you know, for all of posterity, you can honor a loved one. Now, you can go to my website, go online, and apply right now. And you can apply for free. We're not taking money yet. But you can get in line. You know, you can get in line for one of these 250 cannonballs to forever memorialize a loved one.
This is cool. What is that website, Jim, in closing?
JimTheSharkDryer.com. A link's going to pop up right at the top, and just follow the link and follow the directions.
Yes, you should have that that website. Jim the Shark Dryer, good luck. Continue training to you, and we'll be tracking. Take care.
Oh, thank you so much, Shelley. Always a pleasure. You take care as well.
As part of this special programming, we bring in the best, Rosie Rios on the line, chair of America 250. We're getting close. We're talking all things fireworks, food, and a new fourth tradition, generosity for others. Appreciate you, Rosie. Well, it's about here. We're almost there. Good morning, Rosie.
Good morning.
But we know we want to celebrate all year long as well. I want to get right into our conversation. Yes, you, chair of America 250, we're talking Giving Fourth. What is America 250 hoping Americans will actually do this July 4th besides eat a hot dog and watch a firecracker?
Well, that's the beauty about Giving Fourth. Look, we already are a generous nation. We come together on July 4th to have our community potlucks, to have our barbecues, and come together and celebrate together. So this is really kind of a natural extension for us. We are a very, very, very generous nation already. And so Giving Fourth is aiming to kind of move the needle on making this new season of giving to the halfway point of the year to empower nonprofits to do what they do best.
Imagining again how the country celebrates Independence Day. So how are we getting involved with Giving Fourth?
So, you know, a lot of folks already give throughout the year. In fact, for most nonprofits, they get about one-third of their funding at the end of the year when people are thinking about their tax deductions. What better way to kind of structurally change the paradigm of giving than by moving it to this halfway point of the year? And I think the best way to think about this now is we are in this kind of pledge mode, right? So if you go to our website at America250.org, you can sign up to pledge, which basically means you want to participate in being part of this new tradition of this halfway point of the year in the summer. And then what we want to do is have this be the beginning of the journey, not the end of the journey, and that on July 4th, we want to start the movement and continue that on even to the next July 4th to make that the largest day of giving in our country's history. So we all want the fireworks. We all want the pomp and circumstance, the moment of the semi-quincentennial on July 4th. But what a great legacy to think about kind of how do we unify our country and embrace our generosity that we always have and make that official as part of the Giving Fourth movement.
To whom am I giving? Who's the lucky recipient?
Anyone you choose. So we're partnering with Giving Tuesday, and you probably know the way they work. They operate on the Tuesday after Black Friday, after Thanksgiving. And so, you know, again, that's still part of the holiday season. And so by moving this, you know, a few months ahead to July, you know, that's the great part of this is you can choose whatever charity you want. So if you go to our website at America250.org, there's a link to Charity Navigator. That basically tracks all the 501c3 nonprofits who are in good standing with the IRS. So it's a great way to learn more about these organizations, think about how you can make your pledge to participate, and then, again, continue this journey all the way through 2027 and beyond.
And you touched on this, but just for a reiteration, why is mid-year giving so crucial for nonprofits that serve our communities, especially here in West Michigan?
Well, our goal is to have this movement create something what I call give early and give often. What nonprofit is going to say, I don't want our money any earlier, right? And so by literally empowering them to do what they do best, which is feed the hungry, house the unhoused, all these other organizations that do such great work, this is our way of supporting them earlier in the year than what would normally happen.
Again, Rosie Rios on the line, chair of America 250, the part of our special programming to get you involved in many ways, and now obviously with the art of giving. Lastly, what impact do you hope this effort will have beyond, well, this great year of 2026?
Well, you know, we have been commissioned for quite some time. This is my eighth year on this commission, 4 years as chair. And when people ask me, what do you want to accomplish through the semi-quincentennial, my answer is the same. I want as many Americans as possible to still feel like this is the land of opportunity. And what better way to do that by giving back through Giving Fourth?
All right. There you are. What are your July 4th plans, please?
Mine? Well, I'll be everywhere. But we are doing America's Block Party on July 4th, anchored in Los Angeles. But that's the first ever synchronized celebration that our country is seeing using technology to be able to watch what's happening all over the country together.
That's cool. One more time, best way to find out more information.
America250.org.
Thanks for your time, Rosie, and the art of giving back and celebrating 250. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good that you are here. Colin Woodard, Director of Nationhood Lab at Salve Regina University's Pell Center. Glad you're here. Good morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you celebrating 250, yet looking in between the sheets to see what's happening when it comes to the Declaration of Independence continuing to serve, well, as a powerful common bond that unites us. Tell us, first of all, about Nationhood Lab.
Yeah, Nationhood Lab, we study the various problems of U.S. nationhood. What holds us together? What divides us? How can we solve those sorts of things, including the reasons for the deep divides we have in the United States today?
Yes, and headlines are often focusing on what divides Americans. And your new research, I understand, suggests some of America's deepest divides date back to colonial times. Expand from here.
Yeah, it goes way back, indeed, to the beginning of colonization and to the differences between the competing colonial projects that formed on the eastern and southwestern rims of what's now the United States. Right? The colonies were all formed at different times by people with completely different ethnographic and religious and political characteristics and societal models, and none of them thought that they were going to one day be in a continent-spanning federation together. Think about it. The Puritans who founded New England were a people who thought they were literally on a mission from God and had been chosen to create a more perfect society as they understood it in the New World, and that they had to do it together through shared institutions. Whereas just south of them, there was the area around New York City that was settled by the Dutch and was modeled on Golden Age Amsterdam of the 17th century. So it was a commercial, you know, corporate-run city-state, but also had these Dutch characteristics that were really unusual at the time of freedom of conscience and inquiry and tolerance of, you know, ethnic and religious diversity. And then, you know, that all had effects on how the country was settled and where immigrants went thereafter. For instance, by the mid-19th century, when Western Michigan was the frontier, the, you know, Dutch separatists in Holland, the people who were concerned about the liberalism and cosmopolitanism of Amsterdam back at home, who wanted to preserve their tight-knit and conservative religious society, went to the frontier. And they didn't choose to go to the Dutch-settled zone around New York City. That was what they were trying to escape. They actually went to the Yankee Greater New England frontier, you know, in a society also created by Calvinists, where they could create in Western Michigan and Holland and around Grand Rapids a place where their, you know, religion could be conducted without that kind of interference. So yeah, it had all kinds of push and pull factors and where people moved and where they came from since to the different regions.
Thank you for your knowledge and passion. And yet, despite these differences, what your research did does find overwhelming agreement on the ideals of the Declaration of Independence. And I guess what that tells us, what still unites Americans today?
Yeah, you know, what's ever united us given that background, and what can unite us today? And the answer is indeed the Declaration and the idea and vision of a society that comes from it. That was our opening statement as a people, our mission statement for the United States. And we polled extensively on this. And for instance, we asked Americans in a national poll, hey, do you agree with the proposition that we as Americans are duty-bound to protect one another's rights to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and those natural rights in the Declaration? And it came back 97-2 in favor. I mean, you don't see 97-2 as an answer, you know, on any question to Americans. If you ask Americans, you know, is the earth round or flat, and the Pew Research Center has, it's 80-10 with 10% undecided. So 97-2 is unusual. It's almost universal. So, yeah, Americans were sort of hardwired in our subconscious that the purpose of this country is to try to, you know, achieve the dream of the Declaration, a society where, you know, all humans can be as maximally and sustainably free as possible.
Speaking with Colin Woodard, director of Nationhood Lab at Salve Regina University's Pell Center. Tell me, what does the Social Capital Index measure? Where does our state rank when it comes to, I understand, community engagement and connection?
Yes, social capital is a measure of how, you know, how well the people in a community know each other and can organize together. Do they have relationships with each other? Do they know each other from churches and bowling leagues and so on? Where the stickiness that makes it possible for a group of people to organize and do things and respond to crises and all of the rest. And that's been shown that if you have a lot of social capital, it has economic advantages and political advantages and social advantages and so on. There are big differences in social capital between the regions because of their different hardwired ideologies. in the Yankeedom, which is what I call the greater New England cultural space, where New Englanders and their descendants were among the first colonists, that includes much of Michigan, including Western Michigan, and the sort of, in those areas, social capital is relatively high, and that's also true of Western Michigan, where, instinctive in the culture that you're going to do things as a group through common institutions, going way back to the Puritans, that's kind of the assumption of how things will function. And that has all kinds of knock-on advantages in a society.
Well, again, a brief conversation, but an important conversation on the topic of why are Americans so divided? The answer may be 400 years old. All right, Colin, how do we find out more information about this?
Oh, you can go to selve.edu/Pell Center, P-E-L-L, and find out a great deal.
Keep up your good work. Yes, keep up your good work, and thanks for including Michigan, West Michigan, in your conversation. Take care.
Thank you.
Only get the best. Dave Borgasani with us. He's a chocolate historian with Mars, Inc., American Heritage Chocolate, plus Marcus Smith. He's a history and interpretive fellow with Du Bois Freedom Center. We're talking all things preparing to celebrate this 250th anniversary. A new History Tellers Award shines a spotlight on the interpreters and guides who bring history to life at historic sites and museums. Looking forward to this. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us, Shelley.
Chocolate a day keeps the doctor away, but probably not true. Marcus, good morning to you.
Good morning as well.
All right. Wonderful. Dave, talk to me first of all about your organization and what it's like to be a chocolate historian.
Well, we are part of Mars, and what most people know about Mars is that we make great chocolate brands. You know, one of the things, Shelley, that most people don't know is that Mars, along with American Heritage Chocolate, which is one of our brands based upon recipes from the 1700s, has been committed to preserving American history for over two decades now. But as our nation starts to celebrate its 250th anniversary, we at Mars wanted to shine the spotlight on the people who help connect audiences to our nation's past in meaningful ways. The History Tellers Award was created to do just that. And this new award actually celebrates individuals just like this year's winner, Marcus Smith, from the Du Bois Freedom Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
Congratulations, Marcus. Talk to us about what you do and why it matters.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm grateful and excited to be selected for this award, and I appreciate your congratulations. At the Du Bois Freedom Center, through programming, tours, and events, we focus on the life and legacy and greater contributions of the figure known as W.E.B. Du Bois. And for those who are unfamiliar, he is one of the co-founders of the NAACP in 1909 and is often considered the premier architect of the civil rights movement. So much so, in fact, that he actually passed a day before the March on Washington in Ghana, West Africa. And he was honored there by Roy Wilkins, the then executive secretary of the NAACP, who said, "At the dawn of the 20th century, his is the voice calling you today to stand in support of this cause." And his voice is as relevant then as it was today. His conversations around American democracy, the promises of it, around civic engagement and civic responsibility are ones that are especially important as we approach the 250th anniversary of our nation.
All right. Dave, you're a chocolate historian. As we mentioned, what surprises people most about chocolate history?
Well, one of the things that surprises most people as well as me is how often chocolate shows up throughout American history. You know, as we approach our America's 250th anniversary, it's fascinating to see how chocolate has been a part of so many major milestones. For example, our founding fathers actually enjoyed drinking chocolate. Chocolate was often used as a currency. Chocolate was a war ration. It even traveled to some of the most extreme places on Earth, from the highest peak, top of Mount Everest, all the way to the lowest point on the Earth, the bottom of the Mariana Trench. It has even gone into outer space. And let's face it, Shelley, almost everybody loves chocolate.
There is some truth to that. And it can be a healthy choice in one way or another. Marcus, someone in review, but talk to me more about your inspiration, your passion for history, and what winning the History Tellers Award means to you and how you'll go forward.
Absolutely. So I give honor and respect to my grandparents for that. At a very young age for the generation of our family, they emphasized the importance of storytelling, history, celebrating history, and also carrying it forward to the next generation, both the challenges and opportunities and achievements. And for me, winning this award feels in a lot of ways that I'm honored, not only honoring them, but also the mission they instilled in me and the work that I'm doing, not only at the Voice Freedom Center and beyond.
Thank you for that. Dave, other facts you'd like to share, including how we follow up on this and how to best celebrate July 4th this year?
Well, great. It's a great question. I think one way we can do it is summer's a great time to go out and visit a lot of our big historic sites across this country. A lot of our museums and even living history places are great places to learn about our nation's history. But definitely check out the Du Bois Freedom Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, where Marcus works. But I also can encourage you to go out and take a look at the museums in your communities. And for more information about the History Tellers Award, American Heritage Chocolate, and Mars's ongoing commitment to American history, visit us at AmericanHeritageChocolate.com. And be sure to visit the Du Bois Freedom Center.org website for their fantastic summer programming schedule.
Gentlemen, thank you for your partnership. Again, this wonderful History Tellers Award, plus, again, just the opportunity to talk history and chocolate in the same conversation. Dave and Marcus, thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.
Well, we're getting closer to, well, the formal celebration, perhaps, for America's 250th birth. Yet we know we've all been celebrating as we speak. My next guest has been working on a guide for us. A guide to the document that inspired our nation is the tagline for the Declaration Recorded. I'm glad that you are here. This work, no stranger to you, Katie Kennedy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. For you, I trust A250 is no stranger to most of us if we are paying attention to what's happening in our world, Katie?
Yes. Yes. Very excited about the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, such a foundational document for our country.
Thank you. And of course, you, with your acclaimed, the Constitution decoded, the President's decoded, and now the Declaration decoded. What's your premise?
Well, we're trying to make the Declaration of Independence, this third of three books in that series, accessible to people, both to kids and also to adults. The language is not what we use today. It's not really accessible to people. And a great deal of what it says it can be confusing. You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote the draft of the Declaration, and the Second Continental Congress edited it heavily. But he starts with the right to revolution, and then he goes into 27 grievances, and then he ends with invoking the right to revolution. The structure itself is really quite dynamic. But those 27 grievances are not very people at the time didn't even understand what they all meant. But taken together, they really made them angry.
Why is it so important right now for we Americans, especially young people, to truly understand the Declaration, Katie?
Well, the Declaration was America's first and most important resistance document. It's the embodiment of our political principles. It also contains some of the most beautiful lines ever written by an American, probably the most beautiful lines not written by Abraham Lincoln. That's a reminder that we have lofty principles, that we can speak with passion and eloquence. We can undertake dangerous and difficult things. These signers were risking their lives, and they knew it. So while it's a document of protest, it's also a document of hope. And I think that speaks to our day, too.
Yes, the book for readers age 10 and up, most likely right up to 110. You explore the arguments about government rights, responsibilities, and freedoms. Give me a sample.
Yeah, so Thomas Jefferson goes back to John Locke, another political philosopher from the Enlightenment, saying that government exists to secure the rights of the people. The people don't exist for the government. The government exists for the people. It's meant to make us safer, make us happier, make it easier for us to earn a living and so on. And that if the government does not do that, if it works counter to that, the people have a right to change that. We talk about all men are created equal. These are basic American political principles. Government gets its legitimacy from the governed. These are important principles that underlie everything that we do, really.
Yes. And you explain many grievances against King George III. An example here, please.
Sure. So they said that the... I should tell you that Jefferson really goes in hot to those grievances, and he really had a steam going there, and Congress toned him down quite a bit, and they cut 25% of his document. He wasn't very happy about it, but the grievances got more intense as they went along, you know, the greater things as they went along, and one was the burning of Norfolk. The king had waged war. This is a later one, obviously, but had waged war on his own people. When the Declaration was written, King George III of Great Britain had foreign mercenaries on the ocean sailing towards his American colonies to fight the colonists. And people were outraged that he had hired mercenaries. They knew about this by this point, that he had hired mercenaries to come kill them, not just good British soldiers, but foreign soldiers were going to come kill them. So people were outraged about this. And it's not just, we talk a lot about taxation without representation, but it wasn't just financial issues. The colonists felt that their rights were being violated, and they were correct. Things were being done to the colonists that could not have been done to someone who lived in London or Oxford or somewhere else in Great Britain. So the colonists were correct about that.
It's talking all things A250. The celebration most likely started for sure here in our own backyard of West Michigan, but July 4th will be a big day, and it's been a big labor of love for Katie Kennedy. Her latest is out in the series, The Declaration Decoded, a guide to the document that inspired our nation. Any misconceptions people have about what the Declaration says and how those misunderstandings may impact civil life today?
Yeah, people get it confused with the Constitution, which is very understandable. They're both documents most people have never read or have not read for a long time. But the Constitution, of course, was written when a United States of America existed and has the force of law. It's the highest law in the land. The Declaration was written as a breakup letter, probably the world's most famous breakup letter. I guess we would use a text today. It doesn't have the force of law, but it does have the force of poetry and of principle. It's sort of an inspirational document that's for the nation that we have not always been, but have always aspired to. And Abraham Lincoln called the Declaration the golden cord, I'm sorry, the electric cord that binds patriotic hearts. From era to era, from century to century. I think that's just right. Historian Pauline Meyer calls it American scripture. It's been that important to us as a people.
Katie, I see you did once catch your then 9-year-old daughter reading the Constitution under the covers with a flashlight. Is this the best recommended reading, you think, position?
Well, put the mom in a terrible position because you're going in there to bust the kid, right? And then she looked up at me and she smiled and she said, Article 2 has some good stuff. And I thought, well, so I just pretended I hadn't seen her and walked back out. So, yes, I guess that's the best recommendation.
Yes. Well, 250 years later, the Declaration Decoded does bring a powerful text to life for a new generation. Your final word, please.
I just hope that people will read the book, but even more, they'll read the Declaration, they'll read the Constitution, and get back in touch with our underlying principles.
Thank you. Again, your series From the Constitution to the Presidents, and now the Declaration Decoded. Katie Kennedy, how do we find out more information?
You can go to katiekennedybooks.com, and you can find the book Barnes & Noble, your local indie, Amazon, anywhere you buy books.
That's where we are in life. Thank you for bringing that history to life, and good 250th to you and yours. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Inspiration for the day, according to Geoffrey Chaucer, patience is a conquering virtue. So there we are. A little special programming tomorrow. Back at it Monday. Have a great July 4th, and thanks for listening. I'm Shelley Irwin.